The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we start this week on the front page with the headline, Healthcare Smoking Gun, How the Duke UNC Tobacco Treatment Specialist Training Program, led by Dr. Adam Goldstein, is tackling the leading cause of preventable deaths in the U.S. And the article begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline, A Concerted Effort to End Smoking, an inside look at how Duke University and UNC Chapel Hill are putting forth time and expertise to help stop one of the most powerful addictions known. And this is written by Connie Gentry. When the 63-year-old chief financial officer of a Research Triangle Park tech company died suddenly, he was holding a half-filled glass of scotch in one hand and a cigarette in the other. 2 months prior, as he was being discharged from UNC Rex Hospital following a routine bypass surgery, his doctor was clear, cut back on drinking and stop smoking immediately or he would not live long. Cigarette smoking is the leading cause of preventable deaths in the U.S., according to the Centers for Disease Control, and the Triangle's most iconic competitors have collaborated to develop and amplify an evidence-based tobacco cessation program. The Duke UNC Tobacco Treatment Specialist Training Program has been delivering thought leadership to medical, behavioral, and public health professionals since 2016. But the work their medical teams have been doing with patients precedes the training initiative by a decade or more. Our programs help patients quit smoking when they're hospitalized with smoking-related illnesses, and it helps people who have cancer quit to prevent second cancers or worsening of first cancers, says Dr. Adam Goldstein, Director of Tobacco Intervention Programs at the UNC Chapel Hill School of Medicine, which also leads tobacco cessation programs for worksite wellness programs and has an outpatient program. We take care of adults as well as adolescents, sometimes from about 10 years of age up to their 80s, and we see over 4,000 patients a year with folks that come from more than half of the counties in North Carolina, he says. The success rate is consistent. More than 1,000 of the patients they see annually quit tobacco long term. The results are due to a combination of evidence-based medication and intensive behavioral therapy. We know that 85% of people who have alcohol abuse problems also smoke. And the thinking used to be if those people could give up alcohol, we didn't worry about the tobacco too much, but the number one reason why people who quit an alcohol addiction die is because of tobacco addiction, Goldstein says. A 2002 report from Oxford University Press cited the comorbidity at a higher range, stating 80 to 90% of patients with alcohol use disorder are smokers. Unfortunately, nicotine addiction is one of the most powerful addictions known, Goldstein says. You take someone who's been addicted to alcohol, cocaine, opioids, and tobacco, and they'll tell you tobacco is the hardest of those addictions to break. But if they are able to quit their tobacco addiction, the likelihood they will stay abstinent-free from any other addiction is much higher. He estimates maybe 1 to 2% of smokers will quit spontaneously. Given a strong wake-up call, maybe 5% will quit. If I give you medications and I know what I'm doing with the medications, I can get you up to 18%. And if I combine medications and intensive counseling like we do at Duke and UNC, smokers are 15 times more likely to quit, 6 times more likely than what happens when most providers tell them to quit or write a prescription but don't really follow them. Of the 7 FDA-approved drugs used for tobacco cessation, 5 are nicotine replacement medications and the other 2 are Wellbutrin, bupropion in its generic form, or Chantix, Varenicline is the generic name. Chantrix has the highest quit rate of any medication. Goldstein notes, and Duke and UNC have discovered that using a combination of a long-acting medication, which addresses nicotine in the body, with a short-acting drug for when patients experience triggers to smoke, is most effective. Chantix is also particularly useful for patients who are still smoking because it diminishes the pleasure of smoking and takes away that urge to smoke, Goldstein says. In addition to prescribing medications like Chantix and nicotine patches, this program is counseling heavy, with a lot of motivational interviewing and cognitive behavioral therapy and a lot of skills training, says Rachel Joyner, a nurse practitioner at Duke Health, who is on the leadership team of the Duke UNC Tobacco Cessation Program. Mostly, they've been training other medical professionals, hospitals, and behavioral therapists. And more recently, they've begun creating individualized sessions with content created specifically for different entities. We're doing more tailored group courses, like at Fort Liberty. We saw this huge need because in some cases, up to 60% of folks in the military are using tobacco, and the healthcare providers on base didn't know how to deal with it because there's a high use of non-traditional tobacco products like vapes, chewing tobacco, and smokeless tobacco products like Zyn pouches, which is pure nicotine, Joyner says. The Duke UNC TTS program has recently done a training session for a research group at Georgetown University, and they're creating a training series for healthcare professionals in Washington State. In June, Goldstein attended the White House Summit on Smoking Cessation, where he presented a coalition of 16 academic health centers that had put together a proposal for a demonstration project with Medicare on a sustainable payment model for tobacco cessation. Locally, he works with the Town of Chapel Hill's Worksite Wellness Program, where there are roughly 100 tobacco users, and he estimates around 1,600 UNC employees are tobacco users who could take advantage of the tobacco cessation counseling. One of the employee health benefits we offer for all the UNC employees is access to FDA-approved medications free of charge and access to free intensive behavioral health therapy, Goldstein says. The Duke UNC collaboration also makes a compelling argument that a sustainable business case exists for funding and implementing tobacco cessation programs. Goldstein points to reductions in readmission rates that are among the positive outcomes of quitting tobacco. One day, and it's not that far off, hospitals are going to make their money, not from billing, but from saving dollars when they save lives, he says. Joyner looks at the business case from the employer perspective, citing statistics from the U.S. Surgeon General and CDC that say employers spend an additional $659 per year in medical and pharmacy costs for each employee who smokes, and employees who smoke also cost businesses an extra $1,760 per year in lost productivity. Her recommendations for businesses? Make evidence-based tobacco cessation programs accessible and affordable for employees and transition to a tobacco-free workplace. Going smoke-free in a workplace is challenging because you have to give employees proper notice since nicotine is very addictive and employees need to have resources for getting treatment. But from my professional experience in treating patients, working in a smoke-free area really helps them cut down on their smoking, she says. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. The first headline, cool event pits Raleigh versus Scots. The American efforts in the Ryder Cup didn't go so well in Italy, but at least at an event in Raleigh, the local team had better results. For the fifth time, a group from Raleigh Country Club faced a visiting team from the Royal Dornoch Golf Club in Scotland for a Ryder Cup-style event. The two clubs have important ties to Donald Ross, whose most famous course is Pinehurst No. 2. Ross was from Dornoch and grew up playing the course before moving to the United States. His courses echoed the simple but challenging courses of his native Scotland, and his final course was Raleigh Country Club, which opened in 1948. It's a neat relationship we have developed because of that, says Brian Kittle, the vice president of golf operations for McConnell Golf, which owns RCC. A driving force in the event is Players Retreat owner Gus Gussler, a member of both RCC and Royal Dornoch. The night before the match, all the golfers feasted on juicy steaks at the PR. In the match, Raleigh Country Club won 16.5 to 7.5, a far better result than Europe's 16.5 to 11.5 win in the Ryder Cup. The Raleigh team had an advantage playing on their home course where the previous four matches were played. The Raleigh group played to planned to play in Scotland in 2020 before COVID ended those plans, but now plans to go over for a match in 2024. But the scores are less important than the event. They're just great, Kittle says of the Scots. They love the game of golf. It's more about the fellowship than the competition. The camaraderie, Gussler says, is fantastic. Canes owner says Raleigh should pursue MLB. Carolina Hurricanes owner Tom Dundon is eager for the Triangle to add another major league sport, baseball. Major League Baseball now has 30 teams, but under its labor contract can expand to 32. I will lead a group to put our best foot forward to get a Major League Baseball team in North Carolina, Dundon told radio host David Glenn. He noted that now that the Canes are locked into PNC Arena for the long haul, he's ready to look at other options for the market. I know I'm biased, but I think Raleigh is the best place in the country for a new MLB team. And when I say that, I think we have the facts to back that up, Dundon said. Airbnb has a new option. The new Airbnb platform is giving Triangle renters the chance to make extra money off their apartments. Airbnb launched Airbnb-friendly apartments in late 2022, which allows tenants to rent their apartment while traveling. More than 250 properties are part of the program, including five apartment complexes in the Triangle, Columns at Wakefield, Bridges at North Hills, and the Marlow Lake Boone, all in Raleigh, have signed on, along with Avana on Broad in Durham and the Alcove Garner. This totals 1,697 local units that are eligible for use as rentals. Similar to housing rentals, renters can set any price they want for their apartment. To entice potential hosts, Airbnb advertises the average earnings. For example, those living at the Marlow Lake Boone could make an average of $569 per week. Huge rental now available at OBX, the Outer Banks. If you've got extended family and you want to rent a space at the beach, as in a ton of space, now is your chance. A new home at Killdevil Hills features a stunning 36 bedrooms and 39 bathrooms. The four-story home also features a theater with tiered seating, a home arcade, and a rec room with a pool table and foosball. It also includes a private pool with cabanas and a hot tub. The offering from Twitty & Company runs from $11,999 to $69,995 per week. Mr. Beast inks Hornets deal. Mr. Beast, the social media name for Greenville YouTube star Jimmy Donaldson, has a new deal with the Charlotte Hornets. Donaldson's co-founded food brand Feastables will have its logo on the Hornets jersey. It continues the stunning rise of Donaldson, who is only 25 but has 188 million YouTube followers. Feastables is a nationally distributed line of snack bars, cookies, and gummies. And finally, Epic Veteran makes a career move. Epic Games' transition from game developer to platform has some veterans rethinking their future, especially after owner Tim Sweeney announced 830 jobs will be cut. Longtime employee Sergey Galyankin, the director of publishing strategy, tweeted recently he was leaving. Galyankin listed some of his accomplishments, such as being part of the team that launched Fortnite. "We proved that free-to-play without pay-to-win can work at scale," he wrote October 7th on X. But now he said he is not a good fit. "It requires people of a different kind," Galyankin wrote. And now we turn to the top news stories in the Triangle Business Journal. Oxford could be next Triangle town to see surge in growth. If you ask Bob Zumwalt, the director of planning and landscape architecture for Texas-based engineering consultant BGE Incorporated, Oxford could be the next Pittsburgh or Sanford. A couple of projects he's working on would certainly add to the population of about 9,000 in the Granville County town, located about 30 miles north of downtown Durham along Interstate 85. Zumwalt has applied for a conditional rezoning for two sites in Oxford, one titled Knott's Grove Assemblage that contains more than 260 acres, and one called Raleigh Road Assemblage that spreads across just under 168 acres. From residential agricultural to conditional zoning to accommodate two huge subdivisions that will include more than 1,250 housing units combined with a variety of home styles. The Knott's Grove assemblage will feature 243 townhomes and 593 single-family homes across three parcels off I-85. Sumwalt says the Raleigh Road assemblage will have 148 townhomes and 268 single-family homes across four parcels off the intersection of Raleigh Street and West Antioch Drive. According to Zumwalt, the developer of the project is Oxford Land Project, an LLC tied to Cary developer Matthew Danielson. The land for the project is currently under contract and no home builder has been selected yet. The townhomes will have 2 to 3 bedrooms, according to Zumwalt, and the single-family homes will have 3 to 5 bedrooms. He did not have an estimate for square footage or price ranges. The developer hopes to begin construction in fourth quarter 2024, with houses hitting the market the following year, he says. The average value of a home in Granville County has surged in recent years to above $300,000. Meanwhile, average home prices across the Raleigh and Durham markets were above $500,000. A number of bedroom communities to the Triangle, such as Sanford, Roxborough, and Pittsburgh, are experiencing growth, Zumwalt said. We believe Oxford will be next, and for a number of reasons. Oxford's thriving downtown district is located just 30 minutes north of Durham, which makes for an easy commute to the Triangle. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the reporter pages, the first one written by Lauren Onosorge on tech and finance. Mass layoffs leave refugees scrambling. Millennium Print Group cuts 800 temporary positions. For a group of Afghan refugees in Raleigh, a local employer's decision to terminate 800 temporary positions has a far-reaching impact. Some of those laid-off workers say they had been working at Millennium Print Group, a subsidiary of the Pokemon Company International, for years before suddenly being let go last month. They say they were counting on the paychecks to send money home to family in Afghanistan, where making just $50 a week is not uncommon. That includes people like Katima Nowrozi, who fled the Afghan capital of Kabul during the chaos of the U.S. military withdrawal in the summer of 2021. Nowrozi didn't get the chance to tell her family goodbye. MPG is not alone in hiring refugees in the Triangle, as firms such as Cisco Foods, Pfizer, and Pepsi Bottling Ventures also hire workers fleeing from dangerous and often deadly crisis overseas. An MPG spokesman did not return a request for comment for this story. Michael Thompson, founder and CEO of refugee recruiter Turus Group, describes MPG as the largest employer of refugees in Raleigh and says that its layoff announcement stung. His firm connected more than 100 refugees to MPG and is working to find them new job placements, something that's complicated by perception. While refugees have full legal work status, many business owners falsely believe it requires a sponsorship, Thompson says. They're totally legal, he says, of refugee employees, adding that they also tend to be hard workers. They show up, they don't do drugs, they work really hard. We call them the best-kept secret. Now, Rosie ended up in Raleigh, where she started working for Millennium Print Group in 2021, sending money home each week to support her family until she was among the 800 MPG workers laid off last month, her first time unemployed in America. Breeze Airways could see more RDU growth. Breeze Airways CEO David Neilman says the airline has seen strong business at Raleigh-Durham International Airport since making its debut at the airport in February. Breeze now offers 9 flights out of RDU, including the recently launched Las Vegas and Tampa flights. It will be 10 destinations when the nonstop flight to Fort Myers, Florida launches November 17. Neilman says more flight announcements are always possible. You'll probably see some different destinations as we move into spring, he says. Breeze, which had boarded 40,870 passengers at RDU through August this year, isn't the only new airline at RDU seeing success in the skies. Avalo, another low-cost carrier, boarded 104,548 passengers during the same period. Together, Breeze and Avalo make up just over 3% of RDU's market share. And finally, video game company to expand in RTP. As some Triangle Studios tighten, a stealthy video game developer owned by toy giant Hasbro is doubling down in the Research Triangle Park. Ames Kirshen, executive producer and creative director for Atomic Arcade, says his team is at 31 employees and growing. That's why in January, the plan is to take on an additional 3,000 square feet of space at its existing footprint at Hub RTP. The firm is working on a G.I. Joe game and recently entered pre-production. Kirshen says that potential employees need to demonstrate what you bring to the table on top of nuts and bolts of your experience. Cultural fit is really important to us, he says. And our next reporter page is written by Ben Tobin on Greater Triangle Growth. Luxury homes to rise near Jordan Lake, Carey Company to develop 32 homes near town of Moncure. North Carolinians hoping to move to eastern Chatham County may soon be able to live very close to Jordan Lake if they have quite a bit of cash in their pockets. Oakcrest Commercial LLC of Carey has submitted a first plat review application for a housing project called Jordan Retreat, which will consist of more than 54 acres and 32 high-end single-family homes. The land sits north of the unincorporated community of Moncure, where electric vehicle manufacturer VinFast plans to build a $4 billion factory that could employ thousands. Oakcrest Commercial bought the land in 2014 for $500,000, according to Chatham County deed records. Nate Bilek, owner of the LLC, says the project is the first conservation subdivision submitted under the county's new, more stringent environmental guidelines, and that 80% of the land will be preserved for nature. The land is across the road from 14 miles of walking and biking trails, according to Bilek. He calls it a beautiful natural oasis that is minutes away from the Triangle's urban sprawl. You really can't own a home much closer to this lake, Bilek says. It's an amazing playground for active adults and families. Plans call for the homes to be more than 4,000 square feet. Bilek says the homes were originally estimated to be over $750,000 each, but based on current economic conditions, the price point could reach $1 million. The property also features a restored log cabin made from logs dating back more than 250 years. Bilek says the cabin was relocated from a village in Lexington that was once home to a settler group that included Daniel Boone, who lived much of his life in North Carolina. Bilek says the development plan should receive final approval before the end of this year, and he hopes to break ground by spring 2024. Jordan Lake was the third largest lake home market in the state, according to the summer 2023 report from Lake Homes Realty, with a total value of $121 million. These aren't the only lavish homes coming to eastern Chatham County, as developers hope to entice Raleigh business leaders and others who might want to live in a quieter area of the Greater Triangle region. Owners retire, sell auto shop for $1.25 million. A Lee County business has closed its doors after more than two decades. Boyd's Automotive Incorporated, a car maintenance and repair shop at 1615 Hawkins Avenue in Sanford, sold its shop and land to a Sanford LLC called 1615 Hawkins Avenue for $1.25 million, according to deed records. It's unclear what the new owner plans to do with the shop. The organizer of the LLC, Raleigh attorney Barry Mann, did not respond to a request seeking comment. Boyd's Automotive Incorporated owners, Boyd and Debbie Ellis, say the shop's last day was September 29 as they retired. The business opened in January 2000. We're retiring and plan on doing a lot of traveling and visiting our many grandchildren and great-grandchildren, they say. We have loved serving our community, and we hope that the new owners will love it just as much. And finally, beloved bakery to add location in Clayton. Fast-growing Clayton is getting a sweet treat in the form of a new bakery with a statewide following. Bernie's Sweets and More is bringing a location to downtown Clayton, according to franchise owner Jacqueline Finn. The bakery will be located at 312 East Main Street, setting up shop in the former space of Nina's Restaurant and Bar, which closed in August. Finn, a native of the Fayetteville-Rayford area, says she has lived in Clayton for 8 years. Partnering with Bernie's was a no-brainer, Finn says. We've been to multiple locations and absolutely loved it, and we think their products are perfect for the area. And now we turn to the On Healthcare and Higher Ed page, written by Zach Ezone. Syneos execs to get payouts after deal. After $7 billion transaction, Syneos has new ownership. The Triangle is now home to one less public company, and some of its executives could see multi-million-dollar payout deals. Syneos Health, which offers clinical and commercial services to pharmaceutical and biotechnology companies, earlier this year secured a deal to be acquired by Elliott Investment Management, Patient Square Capital, and Veritas Capital for $43 per share. The transaction was valued at around $7.1 billion, including outstanding debt. The deal for the Morrisville company with 29,000 employees globally closed September 28, meaning shares for Syneos are no longer trading on the NASDAQ. With the support of its new investor, Syneos will be poised to further accelerate its transformation, fuel investments in technology that better differentiate its integrated solutions, and expand its commitment to better serve customers, the company said. With the transaction closing, all members of the company's previous board of directors resigned from their positions, aside from CEO Michelle Keefe, according to a filing with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. The new board includes Keefe and representatives from the private investment firms. After the deal closed, Syneos appointed Colin Shannon as CEO and said Keefe would remain with Syneos as a member of the executive leadership team. Shannon is a former CEO of PRA Health Sciences, a Raleigh contract research organization that Icon PLC acquired in 2021 for $12 billion. Shannon also held executive roles at PPD. It is an honor to be tasked with leading Syneos Health at such an exciting time in its evolution, Shannon said. I look forward to working with Michelle and the rest of the leadership team, the board, and our dedicated employees as we push ourselves to new heights. The deal came as the company was struggling to secure new business on the clinical side of its operations. The company earlier this year began implementing cost management initiatives, which include right-sizing and realigning its workforce while streamlining its organizational structure. NC Innovation names regional leaders. A little-known organization in North Carolina with $500 million earmarked for it in the new state budget is building its leadership team. NC Innovation, a not-for-profit group designed to help schools in the University of North Carolina system commercialize their research and technology, has hired four regional directors to lead its efforts across North Carolina. The directors will report to Michelle Bolas, who previously led research commercialization for UNC Chapel Hill and now serves as NC Innovation's Executive Vice President and Chief Innovation Officer. The regional directors will be based at four anchor universities in the different parts of the state: East Carolina University, North Carolina A&T State University, UNC Charlotte, and Western Carolina University. The directors will also manage NC Innovation's work at other universities in each region. And finally on this page, biotech shuts down despite early promise. Less than a year after launching with tens of millions in financial backing, a Raleigh biotech has shut down. Lucaris Therapeutics in November 2022 spun out of RA Capital Management of Boston with $60 million in Series A financing to support the development of a serotonergic psychedelic for patients with treatment-resistant depression disorder. The $60 million was supposed to support the biotech for years as it advanced its lead program and two other preclinical programs addressing neuropsychiatric and neurological disorders. And now we turn to Laura Brumette's page on retail and restaurants. Food Concept makes leap into Durham. Common Market adds its fifth location, plans more expansion. The Common Market, a Charlotte retail chain that's received rave reviews and expanded to five locations, has opened its first store in the Triangle. The new spot in Durham functions as a deli, bar, bottle shop, bodega, ice cream parlor, and coffee shop. The location is in a former office building at 1821 Green Street near the Duke University East Campus. Our brand is really focused on repurposing existing spaces and in a semi-unique way, and the Durham building was certainly a challenge in that regard, owner Graham Worth says. Mid Bloom Coffee, the coffee vendor inside the shop, is set to open soon. Durham ice cream brand The Parlor is the sweet treat vendor located on the side of the building. The Common Market launched as a convenience store in 2002 in Charlotte's Plaza Midwood and now has three locations in the Queen City and another in Rock Hill, South Carolina. The Durham location is aiming to create funky neighborhood vibes as a community meeting space. The space's kitchen has a breakfast, lunch, and nighttime menu featuring items like bagels, wraps, sandwiches, soup, salads, cheesesteak, and fries. An LLC affiliated with the Common Market's owner, Worth, purchased the building for $860,000 in 2021. The 5,400 square foot space dates to the 1960s and previously housed medical offices, according to Durham County property records. The common market has capacity for about 60 people inside with a mix of bar seating and tables. Outdoor seating is also available. Worth, a Raleigh native, has had the goal of bringing the brand to the Triangle since he joined the company in 2016. He picked Durham for the city's funky and eclectic vibe, he says. The location was originally slated to open last fall, but construction delays caused the opening date to be pushed back, Worth says. Nightdale Food Hall closes, and now taco place planned. The Craft Inn Food Hall near Nightdale Station is now closed after the owners sold the business. It will become Tequila, that's spelled T-I-K-I-L-A, a taco restaurant brand that has a location in Wake Forest. The space at 706 Money Court off Nightdale Boulevard opened in February 2022. It housed four individual kitchens, a full bar, and a coffee shop. Craft Inn was launched by co-owners Kip Downer and Max Trujillo. "We are really thankful for the support of the team and the community," Downer says. "We really love the opportunity to try out our idea and are excited for the Tequila team to come in and serve the community going forward." The partners had planned to open a second Craft Inn location in Clayton, but those plans have been canceled. Tequila in Wake Forest is located at 1000 Forestville Road in a retail center anchored by a Publix grocery store. And finally, Bluegrass Festival to leave Raleigh. The International Bluegrass Music Association, IBMA, will no longer hold its five-day conference and festival in Raleigh beginning in 2025. The event has been a big driver of tourism and economic activity downtown since 2013, but its numbers have fallen sharply since the pandemic. The IBMA's board of directors is conducting a site search and will announce a new host city by the end of the year. The city renewed the event's contract in the summer of 2021, agreeing to continue paying IBMA $60,000 in planning funds annually through 2024. The Raleigh team put forth a bid similar to its previous bids in trying to extend the festival's contract, but the two parties could not come to an agreement. Raleigh officials say the plan is to replace the event with a new festival with an expanded scope. And our last reporter page in the Triangle Business Journal is written by Kaylee Thompson on real estate. North Raleigh homes feature California touch. Gated luxury community features pools and much more. Another gated residential community is under construction in North Raleigh and will feature fully furnished homes that start at $5.2 million. Raleigh developer Bison Development is developing Glen Hill, a California contemporary luxury community at the corner of Norwood and Mount Vernon Church Roads. Glen Hill will have 13 homes on 15 acres that will each come with a swimming pool, underground garage, and curated furnishings. Partner Kevin Mangum says the company chose to provide fully furnished homes because in its research, it discovered that furnishing custom homes was a challenge for home buyers. Bison brought on California interior designer Linda Murray, who has designed homes for the likes of James Cameron, Michael Bay, and Cher. Pre-sales have started, and if home buyers purchase before the home is built, they can choose from a variety of plans and work with Murray to select the furnishings. Home sizes range from 6,000 to 12,000 square feet and will have between 4 to 6 bedrooms. Each will have an in-ground pool and underground garages that will hold 7 to 10 cars. There will also be restoration rooms with an infrared sauna, plunge pool, yoga, and exercise space. Mangum says the community will have a sustainable layout with natural grasses, native plants, and drought-tolerant landscaping. Three homes are under construction, with the first already on the market for $5.28 million. The first home will be furnished later this year and the other two next summer. Bison anticipates finishing the community in late 2025. It takes about 14 months to construct one of the homes, not much longer than a typical single-family home. Mangum attributes this to setting up a distribution center that stores all of the home materials in order to minimize delays. Glen Hill is made up of two parcels, 1400 Mount Vernon Church Road and 13520 Norwood Road, with a total assessed value of about $1.6 million. Ryan Lockett of Integrated Design is the architect, while Chase Wyrick of Bison Realty Group is the realtor. North Raleigh is a magnet for custom home and million-dollar home communities. Shadow Creek Estates will have 31 luxury custom homes starting at $2.8 million on Durant Road, while Bailey Farm will have 25 homes near Falls Lake with prices starting at $3 million. Chapel Hill development removes retail, adds affordable housing. A large development in Chapel Hill with a variety of housing types will no longer have a retail component. Chapel Hill Crossing, a 334-home project at Interstate 40 and Highway 501 near the Patterson Place Shopping Center, is being developed by EB Partners. The project went through multiple changes before receiving approval from the town of Chapel Hill. In addition to the retail portion being removed, there are now about 200 fewer units, but affordable housing has been added. The changes have resulted in the cost of the development being reduced from $150 million to about $110 million, according to EB Partners owner, Ernest Brown. The development will be split by Old Chapel Hill Road, where the north side will have a four-story apartment building. There will be 199 rental units rather than the initially planned 160. And finally, developer eyes West Cary for rental homes. More homes are coming to West Cary as the area continues to fill in with residential development. Blue Heel Development of Raleigh has filed site plans for a townhome and single-family home project off Louie Drive, just east of Highway 55. The residences would be near the Brookstone Pool and Playground. Site plans show there will be 29 attached townhomes and 3 single-family detached homes on a little more than 6 acres. The townhomes will be 2 stories with 3 bedrooms. The single-family homes will also be 2 stories and have 5 bedrooms. Rental rates have not been announced. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Viewpoint page to read the guest comment for this week. And this week it's written by Karen Friedman, who is a professional communication coach, speaker, and chief improvement officer at Karen Friedman Enterprises. The headline, "Here's Why Women Should Not Talk Like Men." In the past 25 years, I've led scores of leadership communication programs for women, and almost every one, regardless of experience and rank, someone asked me how women can communicate more like men. After I take a deep breath, I explain that women are not men and should not aspire to communicate like someone they're not. If the individual is really asking how they can come across as stronger, more assertive, and commanding like some of their male counterparts, my answer would still be the same. If you want listeners to see and hear you differently, you need to work on you, regardless of gender. Communication differences between male and females, can be influenced by various factors. Research shows girls tend to develop language skills earlier than boys, which can result in girls using more complex words and sentence structure at an earlier age. Girls can be more inclined to openly express their emotions, whereas boys might be encouraged to suppress emotional communication. As girls grow, research says this often leads to girls being more comfortable discussing feelings and emotions. The same can be said for how boys and girls display different nonverbal communication. For example, girls may use more facial expressions and gestures to express themselves, while boys rely more on body language and physical actions. Just like young girls may learn it's okay to discuss personal relationships, feelings, and social issues, young boys learn to talk about sports, games, and activities. As we grow, this spills over to the workplace. Girls who learn to seek compromise and use verbal expression as children use the same techniques to resolve conflicts at work. They may be inclined to listen more actively and empathetically. Boys who are used to physical play and direct approaches carry that over to the workplace when focused on problem solving and offering solutions. While these differences are general, I believe breaking down gender stereotypes and encouraging everyone to express themselves authentically is key to promoting respectful, healthy dialogue. Women and men should feel free to communicate in a way that feels genuine to them. Additionally, it's important to be adaptable to fit different situations. Years back, I used to co-anchor the news with a male colleague. After a newscast, the boss summoned me to his office and stated from that moment on, only John would read the business news. When I asked why, he told me because John was a man. He was more credible delivering business news. That experience always reminds me of why it's so important to treat everyone as equals. Being a strong communicator transcends gender. Here are a few key tips to help anyone develop strong communication skills. Listening. Listen without interrupting or formulating your response when someone else is speaking. Empathy, sit in your listener's seat to try and understand where someone else is coming from. Ask questions, encourage conversation by asking questions that invite others to share their thoughts and feelings. Hit the headline. Attention spans are dwindling, so get to the point quickly. Clarity, avoid complicated language that can confuse listeners. Keep it simple. Tone, a respectful but confident tone can impact how your message is received. Culture, be aware of cultural differences in communication styles and respect the backgrounds of people you interact with. Strong communication isn't about conforming to a gender-based style. It's about being authentic, respectful, and adaptable when interacting with others. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to news from around the state. Concerns rise in Uptown Charlotte. Crime, real estate, and image among the worries in the city. And this is written by Eric Spanberg with Charlotte Business Journal. A Charlotte City Council committee October 2nd unanimously supported a motion for administrators and the police department to spend the next month crafting penalties for urination and defecation, masturbation, and the consumption and possession of alcohol in public. The effort to curb those behaviors comes in response to increasing complaints and frustration by Uptown residents and businesses over what they and the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department agree are worsening problems. For the proposed ordinances to be enacted, the full council must approve the recommendations by majority vote. Council members and representatives of city government and CMPD all agreed during an hour-long discussion that deterrence is only one part of what must be a multi-pronged approach involving county government, Charlotte Center City Partners, United Way of Greater Charlotte, and nonprofit service agencies with expertise in addiction and mental health. They pointed to a mix of intoxicated bar patrons and unhoused residents as people most often engaging in the problematic behaviors targeted for ordinances. Mayor Pro Tem Braxton Winston, who attended the meeting but is not part of the Housing, Safety, and Community Committee, and committee member Renee Johnson both asked for more definitive statistics on public misbehavior before committing to ramped-up penalties. The committee's actions looks like the beginning of a broader policy discussing aiming to curb and reverse downward trends in Uptown. Sean Heath, an assistant city manager, said he and other assistant city managers will work with the council and its committees in the coming weeks and months to develop ideas to improve public safety and quality of life in Uptown, improve the public realm and build environment, including bus shelters, Tryon Street and the planned McCall Park project, and collaborate with the corporate community on real estate and economic development concerns. The latter includes possible changes necessitated by return-to-work policies, as well as addressing a glut of empty office buildings and possible building conversions. Deputy Police Chief David Robinson told the committee that a lack of potential penalties, such as going to jail, makes it harder to persuade people to stop such behavior or avoid it altogether. And we also have an article from the Triad Business Journal, Truist Triad Market Share Drops. The newest list of market-leading banks in the Triad's three metro areas contains the usual familiar names, but the institution at the top lost market share and deposits in the region year to year, while some smaller players made leaps. Truist remains the market leader by deposits, with nearly 28% in the Winston-Salem Metropolitan Statistical Area, about 24% in the Greensboro High Point MSA, and 23% in Burlington MSA. The figures are from Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation data through June 30. Truist market share declined 1.21 percentage points in Greensboro High Point, about two-thirds of a point in Winston-Salem, and about seven-tenths of a point in Burlington. Deposits for banks in the FDIC's database in the Triad were down almost universally among the larger institutions. An exception was Pinnacle Bank in the Winston-Salem and Burlington markets, which saw deposits grow better than 13% and nearly 29% respectively year to year. Its deposits growth was down slightly in the Greensboro High Point MSA. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Jim Verdonick's column in the small business section. Jim Verdonick is the founder of Fire Pit Cell LLC and a founder of Innovate Capital Law. The headline, How AI Could Make an Impact on Legal Field. I've been testing ChatGPT-4's ability to help serve clients. Wow, very impressive. ChatGPT-4 recently passed the uniform bar exam, landing in the top 10% of scores by recent law school graduates. Some people assume bar exams only include multiple choice questions, so what if software knows the right answers? That's not thinking. That's not real life, but the essence of bar exams are essay questions in which students are given several paragraphs of complex facts and are asked to identify legal problems and solutions. That is exactly what lawyers do for clients. Recent data indicates that about 3% of lawyers are using AI in some form. Question: what's wrong with the other 97%? Of course, traditionalists will talk about how people are more well-rounded than machines, how many lawyers have also passed the business GRE and medical license exams like ChatGPT has. Any lawyer who had accomplished that would be a star. Having spent my career practicing at the intersection of law, technology, and business, I'm impressed with anyone who can master all three. The key to using AI is knowing client goals, what questions to ask, and what background information to give it. Lawyers are usually pretty good at asking questions, but the legal profession sometimes doesn't understand client goals and fails to focus on the most relevant background information. Billions of dollars of legal fees are wasted when lawyers give correct answers to questions that are irrelevant to their clients. That's one reason I'm impressed with ChatGPT. While the lawyer trains it, ChatGPT trains the lawyer to ask better questions that include the project goals and the relevant background information. Here's an example. In a law firm, a junior lawyer may take hours or days to deliver work product for a senior lawyer to review. By that time, the instructions the senior lawyer gave are often forgotten. ChatGPT gives instantaneous answers to questions, so if the product is not what the senior lawyer wants, the deficiency in the instruction is immediately obvious and can be corrected. Of course, ChatGPT is a broad application for many uses. Other AI products are being specifically designed for the legal community. A large international law firm is already deploying a legal AI product called Harvey that's been trained in the laws and languages of dozens of countries. It was named after Harvey Specter, a primary character in the law firm drama series Suits, who was super smart but alienated people with his obsession with winning every case. But Harvey was also the name of a great 1950 movie starring Jimmy Stewart, whose best friend was a helpful, magical, giant white rabbit named Harvey. My hope? That AI Harvey is more like the friendlier movie version. The bottom line is that AI won't replace lawyers, but lawyers who learn how to use artificial intelligence to better serve their clients will replace lawyers who don't. AI products designed for other industries are coming soon. I suggest you begin practicing your AI tool skills now. This article was written by a person, but ChatGPT gave me several helpful suggestions to improve it. I think it's a good combination. What do you think? And also in the small business section, we'll read the executive voice Q&A column that features Ade Karina. The headline, "She Brings Taste of Africa to Triangle." Ade Karina is on a roll after winning 2023 Chef of the Year from Restaurant Association, and this interview was by Laura Bromet. Ade Karina never went to culinary school, and she doesn't make traditional Southern or American dishes like many chefs in the state, but that didn't stop her from winning the title of 2023 Chef of the Year from the North Carolina Restaurant and Lodging Association. The Raleigh chef competed in the 7th annual NCRLA Chef Showdown competition in August, taking home the top honor. Karina is from Benin, a country on the western coast of Africa. She moved to the United States when she was 10. After working as a business banker for a few years, Karina decided to pursue her passion for bringing West African food to the Triangle. Karina now owns two businesses, Dunu Cuisine, a catering and food truck company, and Iliwe Foods, and that's spelled I-L-E-W-A Foods, a retail brand selling spice blends. Karina works with women entrepreneurs and farmers in West Africa to create the blends. The spices are sold online and in local stores, including Weaver Street Market. What got you into cooking? I hated cooking as a kid because it was a chore. Nothing about it was interesting to me when I was in the States. In African communities, cooking is a collective tradition, and it's an oral tradition. You're not really taught to cook. You're in spaces with your mom, your grandmother, or your aunts, and somehow, through this knowledge they share with you and direction they give you, the information just kind of transcends. So cooking was very different for me when I got here to the States, and I hated it. I didn't want to do it until I started working at a farm-to-table restaurant called Heirloom that was in a small boutique hotel at Yale University. That's when I found a love for food, when I realized it was so much more and that you could be super intentional with it. You can create certain experiences for any emotion, make space for certain conversations between all of us, and my mission is really to kind of bridge cultural gaps, to reintroduce African food and create spaces to be able to have conversations that inspire healing, especially throughout the diaspora. How have you funded your businesses? I worked my butt off. Everything I've done so far has been me. With Denu Cuisine, it was me and my work. I didn't raise any funds. I didn't get any loans. Even during COVID, I didn't get any assistance because of the kind of business that I had. So that was very hard and very frustrating for me as a small business in North Carolina to just survive and keep my business afloat. This year is probably the first year where we will actually be making money because a lot of it was invested. How did you get involved with the NCRLA competition? Last year, I was a sous chef for a friend of mine, Malik Williams, who works at TAP at 1918 in Rocky Mount. I hadn't even heard of it before. I didn't think to apply for myself because imposter syndrome is real when you work around such talented people. But my family, my support system was like, you should do it. My thought was, well, I would represent my home and I would introduce people to something new, if nothing else. I didn't actually think I would be the one to win. It feels very validating and reassuring to me that I'm on the right path and that I need to keep pushing. What did you make? I reimagine West African food. I take what I grew up with, like things I remember from my time in Benin, and I show the intersection between that and North Carolina ingredients. I tell the story of how they're not that far apart from each other and how the certain ingredients have come by way of our unfortunate history in this country. I just highlighted the beauty of the foods and cultures and show it absolutely. I made dishes that were very much a representation of myself as a woman who lives in the South, and it very much feels like home for me. I say I'm more of a storyteller than I am a chef, so it's important for me that all my dishes tell the story. How do you see the Triangle's food and restaurant scene? We're definitely progressing, which is a beautiful thing. I mean, there are very limited options for West African food. You're going to find Ethiopian food, you might find East African food, Moroccan food, or South African food. A lot of the time, we just classify things as African. It's important to me that we be specific because Africa is not a monolith. We're growing. It's becoming more diverse. And if we keep going that way, it's only going to continue to grow more. Will you consider opening a brick-and-mortar restaurant? COVID really scared me. It probably scared a lot of us in this industry, but my dream is to be able to open up a brick-and-mortar location. What are people's reactions when they try your food? The first reaction is like, what is this? In a very good way, I hear, it's an explosion of flavors, or I've never had these kinds of flavors before, or you can feel the thought and the intention behind it. Usually, they love the storytelling aspect of it, so that's the educational component that comes with it. What is your favorite thing to make? That's a hard question. I'm probably most known for our suya, which is a big street food dish across West Africa. Basically, we smoke and grill meat with spices, and we serve it chopped up on skewers with onion and more spice on the side. And there's also a closer look section with this article. Age 32, family, 9-year-old daughter, Imara. First job, cashier at Zoot's Dry Cleaners. Favorite restaurant, Chini Indian Food Emporium. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we'll read the big number sections that are sprinkled throughout. The first big number is 830. The number of people Epic Games is laying off after CEO Tim Sweeney says the carry company has been spending way more money than we earn, investing in the next evolution of Epic and growing Fortnite as a metaverse-inspired ecosystem for creators. And our next big number is 108, the number of townhomes Ben Stout Construction of Fayetteville is planning for western Harnett County near the Lee County border. And the next one's marked more as a notable number, 2020. That's about the size of a workforce reduction by Wake Technical Community College. In addition to this workforce reduction, the college is temporarily pausing hiring plans until it receives details on its final budget allocation from the state. The college has about 3,000 employees, with an even split between full and part-time workers. And the next big number is $112.1 billion. That's how much retailers saw in estimated shrink losses in 2022, according to the National Retail Federation. That's up from $93.9 billion in 2021. Organized retail crime is the culprit for much of the losses as violence and aggression from thieves picks up. And next, we have $114.5 million. That's how much the Solis Hills apartment sold for to investment firm TA Realty of Boston. Charlotte developer Terwilliger Pappas developed and sold the apartments. And now we'll read the quotables that are sprinkled throughout the Triangle Business Journal. We start with Perfect Scale CEO Amir Benay on the Morrisville startup recently closing on $7.1 million. Perfect Scale works in Kubernetes optimization, a hot space, as the majority of cloud workloads are now running on that platform. We felt this is the time to put the pedal to the metal and push things forward. And next we have Dan Ahern, Chief Financial Officer of air filter manufacturer AAF International of Louisville, Kentucky, on selling a shuttered plant in Smithfield for roughly $4 million. We've been trying to make a decision as a group, and we determined we didn't need it. And next we have Mary Beth Thomas, Senior Vice President of Science and Business Development for the North Carolina Biotechnology Center, on a statewide effort that was unable to land a hub for a new billion-dollar federal agency. The Advanced Research Projects Agency for Health is establishing hubs in Boston, Dallas, and the Washington, D.C. area, rather than North Carolina. We are proud of the competitive proposal put forth by the ARPA-HNNC Coalition, and we remain committed to engaging and partnering with ARPA-H to realize our shared goals of driving transformative biomedical and health breakthroughs to provide equitable health solutions for all. And next we have a quotable from Anne Goodnight on changes at the Umstead Hotel and Spa in Cary, which she owns with her husband, Jim. The hotel's general manager, Jim Bailey, retired after nearly 15 years. David Mars has been hired to lead the hotel. The hotel is doing better than it's ever done. And our last quotable is from Patrick Young, Director of Planning and Development, City of Raleigh. Producing single-family houses affordably is nearly impossible in Raleigh given the cost of land, material, and labor without government or nonprofit subsidy. Townhouses can allow buyers to have the same or nearly the same amount of living space for up to 15 to 20% less due to shared walls, roofs, and infrastructure. And we'll end our reading of the Triangle Business Journal with the Business Pulse. The question this edition, do you plan to go to the NC State Fair this year? There were 114 responses. 42% of the people say yes. 26% say no. 20% say they haven't been in years. And finally, 12% say maybe. And we've run out of time for today's episode. Hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. And if you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.